Hey, thank you so much for joining us today on From Start to Finish podcast with Christina Faith. I am your host, Christina Faith, where we inspire people to live authentically and start and finish their dreams. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Hey, how you doing? This is Christina Faith here. We are tuned into Inspiring Entrepreneurs from Start to Finish, where we love inspiring entrepreneurs to live an authentic life and do what they were called to do. So today we have Katie Schronlin on the line right now. Today she's going to tell us how she started NoMoreDirtyWork.com. She is an amazing event manager, assistant, just all around incredible entrepreneur. Katie, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks. How are you?
I'm amazing. It's an honor to be on the phone with you. I've seen your journey over the years, and I'm just inspired how you have started and you're finishing and you're continuing to go with the vision that you received. So tell us about, you know, your journey.
My shortest answer to that often is I stumbled into it. And it was never kind of anything I, you know, set out to do from little on or anything, but I went to college to be a teacher. That was kind of all I wanted to do with my life. And I got done with school and realized that was not at all what I wanted to do. Didn't really kind of know where I was going to go, but ended up helping start a church right out of college and did that for 2 years. 2 years into that, just realized that that full-time kind of ministry thing was not for me. And I was just kind of not very happy with life in general. So I kind of made a drastic move. I was born and raised up in Minnesota. I went to school in Wisconsin. Made a drastic move to Nashville. Didn't really know anybody, didn't have a job, didn't really anything. I just felt like that's where I was supposed to be. So I picked up and moved. And when I moved, a friend asked if I would help him with an ebook project he was working on. And I had also attended the Story Conference in 2009 in Chicago. And so when I moved in 2010, I was actually volunteering with the conference. And that volunteering kind of grew into, hey, will you, you know, work with us on this event? And it was November of 2010, after the first story that I worked on, that Ben Arment, who started Story, looked at me one day and said, you know, like, what are you doing with your life? You know, like, why Nashville? What's there? And I kind of told him, you know, I was doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And he just stopped and looked at me and said, you need to start a company and you need to call it Dirty Work because that's what you do for people. And I was quite hesitant about the idea and thought it was crazy. And he said, you know, I know like you don't, the idea of like doing your own thing doesn't really, you know, sound super like, you know, awesome to you, but you just kind of need to get over it because people need what you bring to the table. And so figure it out. And, that was it. It was kind of one of those moments where, you know, you just kind of feel life saying like, what's your excuse? Like you have no reason not to. And, I think that was really the key for me is I had no reason not to. And now, you know, 4.5 years into it, I can't imagine anything else. So it's definitely, like I say, was not an intended journey for me or a lifelong dream, but I couldn't imagine my life looking differently than it does.
Nice. Yeah. He's an amazing man. It's interesting how people are able to identify in you what you don't see that can launch you into other places. So Ben took you on as a mentee, in a sense, and helped you discover who you are. If you have not downloaded my good friend Atiba Halisi's album, The Understudy, you are missing out. It's free. Get it on his website. Get it on Spotify. Just get it on SoundCloud. Here is Unconditional.
Love unconditional, love unconditional, love unconditional. One plus one equals one, do the math, boo. You're my other half, that's a lie. I want all of you, It's only right, I spent my whole life looking for you. I ain't getting neither. This find a wife thing is crucial, it's needed. You're my helpmate, my heartbeat, believe it. No more counterfeits, I found you, I've succeeded. This marriage is ministry in motion. Actions over words, I pray they receive it. You're the canvas that I paint on for all to see. The love between Christ and this church shown through you and me. Divorce rate in the body puts us under scrutiny. But the thought of leaving you, baby girl, that's lunacy. We're starting our own legacy. You got every part of me, perfectly imperfect, describes who you are to me. The rose growing from concrete's in full bloom. You already got the sun, but I'm bringing you the moon.
No, I'm not perfect, no. Made my mistakes and no. But all I want is love unconditional.
First chapter of Proverbs, you swagged it out. Different issues popping up, we learning how to hash it out. Everything I have is ours, money don't matter amount. Purity before marriage, we learned how to survive the drought. Do death do his part, that's the motto. Most deaf, found my brown sugar, no pretty flaco. Fly guy met a fly girl in the land of living colors. Stumbled upon a pearl, yeah. Skin color mocha, comparable to none. 5'5" brown eyes, they look hazel in the sun. She moves with a high step.
With your background, what things did you do that helped you develop to do no more dirty work? What are some of the things that you kind of like looking back realize, oh, that was preparing me for this?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I look back and really my whole life, I've really loved solving problems. I've loved puzzles. I've loved games. I've loved helping people, you know, find answers, get things done. Like that has been mind, like from little on, I can remember that. And that is such a huge part of my job and what I do. And so I think a lot of it, there's a large component of it that is 100% my wiring and my, you know, just kind of my design. But also the church piece was really instrumental in that. I had to learn to do a lot because it was just, you know, the pastor and myself were the staff. And so I did not preach and I did not sing, but everything else was my responsibility. And so in that, you know, I learned to fake my way through Photoshop, and I learned about social media, and I learned really just how to communicate, which is a large portion of being an assistant, you know, is being someone who's really good at communicating and communicating, you know, on behalf of others, communicating with, you know, various types of different people, different levels in terms of, you know, colleagues, you know, overseers, volunteer, really all sorts of, you know, different groups of people. And so I think the church was definitely a huge kind of component of teaching me the skills, or really just kind of highlighting for me that I had skills I may not have realized I had. And it was kind of the first time I got to see the combination of my skill set, which always seemed a little bit disjointed to me, but I got to see that, you know, in this role as like an assistant, as a project manager, all those what seemingly are disjointed skills really come together for kind of one larger goal.
Nice. So the things that you were already doing were preparing you for what you're doing now.
Absolutely.
So no more dirty work. You did this stuff for people, but was this the problem solving and the doing the work for people, was that always the passion? Or did you have times where you're like, why am I doing this for people? They can do it for themselves.
For the most part, I would say 95% of the time, it's always been the former. Like it's always been my passion to help other people. Like I said, I've literally have been wired like that since I was a kid. I was most comfortable as a child, when I was, you know, a child, teenager, I was most comfortable when I was in a serving, helping role. Mm-hmm. I think partly I was raised that way. I had a mom who taught me how to be that, but also it's just really, I think a lot of my personality and my makeup that's where I'm most comfortable. That's where I thrive. And on most days, I absolutely love that. and would not trade it for the world.
Said most days, but on those days that I really am not feeling it, I would love to trade it, but then I realized that it's okay.
Exactly.
What are some of the things that you do for No More Dirty Work, and just in general, because you're a writer as well? I think I was looking at your personal mm-hmm. blog, and I'm like, this girl is a writer. You don't write like 300-400 words, like you write books.
Yes, I do. I think one of the things I love about my job is that I definitely have a creative side to me.
Yeah.
But I'm much more a creative, like, refiner than mm-hmm. an idea generator.
Yeah.
And so I really love working with artists of all types and kind of helping refine ideas and helping implement them. That's really kind of what I thrive on. And mm-hmm. I also thrive on chaos. And so I love, which is what I love about events. You know, you can only plan so much, and the day comes and you just have to be ready to, you know, take what comes. And I love that. And, you know, what I do on any given day, like I say, is hard to explain, but really is hard to explain. It's
that was going to be, that was going to be my next question. So yeah, try to explain, like, yeah, what's your daily routine look like?
So maybe, I mean, it's a lot of email. I have anywhere from 10 to 15 email accounts that I check on a daily basis. For myself, for clients, you know, different projects and whatnot. So it's a lot of email. It's a lot of calendar scheduling and juggling for people. It's a lot of booking travel for clients, making itineraries for clients. But it's also dealing with caterers and venues and event decor and, you know, communicating with speakers and sponsors for events. And it may be, you know, creating some simple, you know, graphics for, you know, screen use in church on Sunday, or, you know, social media use, you know, dabbling in Photoshop. And it's a lot of communicating. And so it's a lot of, you know, word processing, word documents, crafting blog posts for clients. And I think that I love the variety in the job. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the event side is obviously, you know, it's a lot of just kind of taking care of people and making sure people have food and water and they know where they're going and, you know, all those sorts of things. And so, my daily routine is quite scattered. You know, I have my to-do list that I work with on a daily basis. And I also have a kind of a, what I call my big rocks list that I make at the beginning of each week. And so I have some kind of big rocks on days, you know, assign them to a day in the week. And so I kind of try to start with those, you know, focused a lot of times in the mornings. And those are things that take me longer than about 30 minutes. And then I'll just dive into my to-do list. And I work on, you know, clients for about 30 minutes at a time. And then I switch to another client and just kind of go back and forth that way.
Nice. So you do all the dirty work, which is very true. Man, I can't wait till Adele's new album comes out. Here is Turning Tables.
Close enough to start a war. All that I have is on the floor. God only knows what we're fighting for. All that I say, you always say more. I can't keep up with your turning tables under your thumb. I can't breathe. So I won't let turning table.
Been like the biggest challenge for you with remaining authentic online and as an entrepreneur and working and dealing with people? What's one of the biggest challenges in your authenticity?
I think part of the biggest challenge for me with authenticity is balancing authenticity and professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, as a business owner, I'm a pretty open person and I like to share my story, and I believe in vulnerability and the power of it. And so I think it's tough to sometimes balance how much, you know, information is helpful and how much information is too much. You know, I had a season, so I got back this fall, I had a season I was really wrestling with being in Nashville, and I was just like, I was really like antsy, and I was like, I don't know, like maybe I'm supposed to be some, you know, move somewhere else. And I remember I posted a few things about it on social media, and I had a client, I was meeting with a client, and he's like, you know, like I don't get me wrong, like your happiness is way more important than your work with me, but like I'm really kind of like nervous. You keep posting about like you're not really sure if you want to be in Nashville. And it just kind of made it was a really good conversation, but it just kind of made me think, like, you know, what is that balance between, you know, authenticity and yet, you know, being professional and, you know, sharing life and the struggles and the battles in a way that is professional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because ultimately at the end of the day, it, you know, I can't separate, you know, being an entrepreneur from the rest of my life. Like it all kind of, you know, meshes together, which is what I love about it. You mm-hmm. know, life is work and work is life. And, but that balance is definitely probably the biggest challenge.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. You can't, when your clients are those who follow you, you can't tweet everything you're thinking about.
Right.
So I completely understand that. What advice would you give to those that desire to follow their dreams?
Do it.
that's a hard point for a lot of people, though. Yeah,
it really is. Like, you know, and people will say to me, I just, you know, that's just not me, like I'm not a risk taker. And I would say to them, I would have told you that I was not a risk taker either. When I moved to Nashville, like that whole like transition in my life was really, looking back, like I feel like it was a power outside of myself that compelled me to do that, because I was a rule follower. I was an in the box person. I was, you do what you're supposed to do, and you I by the book kind of person. And I always had this kind of probably rebellious spirit, risk taking spirit deep down inside of me, but I didn't listen to it. I didn't. And so I would, you know, like I said, I would have said I was not the risk taker. I was not the dream chaser either. But I think the longer I do it, the more I realize, the more I discover how resilient we are and really how resilient life is.
Mm-hmm.
I came across a quote recently that said, you know, like there's no such thing as messing up your life. You know, like, and so I tell people a lot to ask the question, what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, and I've had several people, you know, since I've moved, and people who know my story, and, you know, they'll kind of reach out and say, you know, I'm kind of thinking about this or I'm thinking about that. And that's my question to them is, what's the worst that's going to happen? So what's the worst that's going to happen if you attempt this? If it's simply that it's not going to work, well, you know, then it's not going to work. Like, and so I think just kind of keeping perspective on those kinds of things, like what's the worst that's going to happen? But also I encourage people to kind of lighten up, on the pressure they put on themselves, kind of give yourself grace, you know, and recognize that, you know, this thought may brew in you for a long time before you're fully ready to jump into it. And that's okay. You know, it's okay to think about it and to talk about it for 6 months before you're ready to leap into it. Mm-hmm. Just be open to it and be aware of it and be sensitive to it, because the day will come where the pain of staying where you are becomes far greater than the pain of the risk. Mm-hmm. And when that day comes, you will take the risk without a second thought. And yep, so I think just encourage people to be patient with themselves and to give themselves that grace and that permission to, mm-hmm. to sit in that tension and to sit in that kind of in between, knowing that when you're, you know, to it, when you're ready, as long as you're open to it and you're listening to it, when you're ready, it'll happen. And you don't have to force yourself into it. Cause you'll be ready. It won't make sense, but you'll be ready.
So. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing. Like, have grace with yourself, because a lot of us, I think that's probably why most entrepreneurs fail, in all honesty, like, because you have to realize that you're going to fail at something. Entrepreneurship is not a cakewalk. You know, the same way you make mistakes at your regular job, if you still work at a regular job, you're going to make mistakes. The mistakes may be more detrimental because you live off of what you're doing, but it's worth it. You know, I can imagine if Donald Trump stopped. And he makes mistakes all the time. He right. makes mistakes that causes bankruptcy over and over again, but he's willing to take the risk. And something that you said was just so key for me is that piece that you said, like, give yourself grace, like, rebel against the system that tells you you have to work a regular job. And that's going to be so important for us in the turning of the years, because right. regular jobs don't exist anymore. You know, it's so hard to find something that you like to do and right. you love to do, you know. And you think about all these guys that are writing books about it, you know, Ben Arment with Dream Year, and now you have John Acuff with Do Over. Like, you have to reshift your mind to realize there's a gift inside of you that's greater than the fact that you don't think that you can do it.
So I think it's important to know your why. Mm-hmm. You know, because something you said, like, there's this shift in our culture in terms of, you know, work. And if as long as your why is strong enough, mm-hmm. you'll do it, and it'll be worth all of that risk.
Yeah.
And so being able to define why is it that you want to do this entrepreneur thing? Why is it that you want to follow this dream? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's equally as important as giving yourself the grace.
Yeah. And I'm reading, I see that the quote on your site from Simon Sinek, and it says mm-hmm. something really key. It says, it's the magical partnership of the person with their head in the clouds and the person with their feet on the ground that creates progress. And you can't be that magical person if you don't know your why, you know, because you'll always be trying to figure out what's the next step, as opposed to, you know, how do I take what I dream of and make it a reality, as opposed to how do I take what I dream of and make money? You know, your why can never be money, because money's going to come and go. So it's always going to be unstable. But if your why is attached to something greater than money, like time, that you really need, that you can't get back, then you'll be able to make those magical moments.
100%. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah, man. I can't wait to be able to fully write about my journey online. I can't currently write about it, but I'll be able to write about it very soon. Let's listen to those Jewish boys, Hazekin featuring Will Passion with Crown.
And now the man with the crown, the fantastic,
the amazing,
Yeshua, the Messiah.
Then David.
The Messiah.
Who was the God man foretold of old in a radiant white robe with a sash of gold? Yeshua, root of Jesse, the master of infinity. The son of David, he's scattering his enemies. God in a physical form, yes, the God-man concept is biblical. To understand it properly, context is critical. Messianic prophecy, all that is literal. Yeah, and the world was made through him. To redeem the world, the word was made human. He's more than phonetic sound. God's word is a tangible, living, kinetic, energetic noun. An extension of God, so he's always been around and will forever be. On the throne, surrounded by the seraphim. Another crown holder that will never be. Verily, verily, yeah. All of you rappers saying you're the king. If not for gullible kids, you'd be a Burger King. But you don't really want beef with the lamb. You can't shish kebab and weave and flee from his hands. No. and it's coming, it's not far. Al-Qaeda will confess, Yeshua who Akbar. Jesus the Messiah, soon to reign, when he returns to the earth like a boomerang. This is the hour, crown him, bless the Lord. His is the power, now and forevermore. Where's the competition at? Not a one found. There's only one king and only one crown. And he got it, he got it, he got it, he got it. He got it, he got it, he got it, he got it. Where's the competition at? Not a one found. There's only one king and only one crown.
I'm living it now, I vision a cloud somehow splitting from a distance. Even the wicked would bow. Profound image of the risen king beginning.
My next question is, you've gone through this crazy process of losing weight and discovering who you are, and all that kind of stuff. Tell us about your journey. Tell us kind of like what has happened to you. More so, what shifted in your mind, you know, to make you realize, oh, I can do this.
Absolutely. So I think part of my deciding to not go into education that I went to school for was my junior year of college, I started having pain in my joints. And I went to the doctor and they diagnosed it as rheumatoid arthritis and got started some medication and it was getting better. And then I went home for Christmas to Minnesota to see my family that December. And I came back to school and a week later, I could hardly walk. I couldn't get up the stairs. I couldn't stand up from a chair. And I had no clue what was happening. Went to the doctor and they ended up diagnosing me with this crazy muscle disease. And it was basically like an arthritis of the muscles. And so I had never been a healthy person. My family's not a healthy, you know, health conscious family. I was raised in farm country. So we ate a lot of meat, potatoes, butter. So I was, like I said, never really a focus on health. And a few years into that kind of disease journey, I was so fed up with feeling so awful that I was like, there has got to be a better way. Mm-hmm. And I had gained a lot of weight from the medications that I was on. And, I finally one day just was like, I'm done. Like there's gotta be something better. And so I just started researching alternatives to, really to feel better, to not live in so much pain, to be able to move. And it, you know, it's been a long process. That's probably about 6 years ago now that it started. And so I had kind of started walking down that path. And then when I moved to Nashville, probably about a year after I moved to Nashville, I started counseling. And because I just feel like something's off. And I'm a pretty self-aware person, but I just couldn't put my finger on what was off. And so I started going to counseling and it wasn't like there was these big major issue, but it was, you know, just these little things and just having a kind of a safe place to kind of talk through some of those things and process them and kind of get some good, you know, insight and questions to help me process it. That's, I think, when the physical journey really gained momentum for me was when I started working on the internal stuff. And a few weeks ago, I saw my counselor, and I still go about like once a month because it's good for my sanity. And mm-hmm. I saw her and she said, you know, something's different about you. And she's like, you just seem lighter. And we kind of talked, you know, like caught up on life. And then I said, oh yeah, by the way, I said, I've been writing out my story on my blog. And she said, that's it. Like she said, cause what happens when you write out your story is you redefine yourself as the hero of your victim or the hero of your story instead of the victim. And that redefining is absolutely what happened for me. And so that was a very long process. I didn't realize how much control I had given to my disease, how much say I had given to it. Mm-hmm. And so I think the shift in me has been, you know, I have a say, I am worth it. I am worth rest. I am worth self-care. Like I am valuable. I am valuable outside of what I do. That was a huge thing for me. And I think that's a really hard thing for any entrepreneur because your work is so intimately connected to you know, who you are as a person, that it's really important to remember that you have value and you are worthy apart from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a huge thing that I had to learn, because that affects how I take care of myself. That affects, you know, all those things. And so those internal mental shifts, you know, have now, you know, the outward symptom of that is, you know, going to the gym is a priority for me. And so I will stop working at 5 p.m. to go to the gym, you know, just those little things. But, that self-care was important, but I had to start with, I have value outside of what I do. And that, like I said, I think that's probably a challenge for most entrepreneurs, just because it's all so intimately connected.
Yeah. I go to the gym in the morning. So I had a similar journey. I was like a size 18, and I've just always been chunky, and I was an emotional eater, and I realized that I was an emotional eater. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, something's really got to change. You know, every year I would write on my goal sheets, you know, I want to lose this amount of weight and do this and do that. And after a while I was like, okay, this isn't happening. And I just looked at myself in the morning and I was like, I can change this. This is under my control. I'm not under the control of this weight. I don't have to remain chunky all my life. And I just started going to the gym, regardless if anybody went with me. I started discovering what it means to eat right and what eating clean means, and that I don't have to completely deprive myself, and I can eat the things that I want, but just being mindful of the macros. And I've lost 7 inches. And for a 4'11 young lady, that's a lot of weight.
Awesome.
I have more energy. Like, I wasn't, you know, full of low self-esteem and things like that, but I was uncomfortable with the body that I was in such a way that, you know, I wasn't depressed, but I was really like, okay, I can change this. And I've always been athletic, but understanding food was really important for me. Pushing at the gym isn't a hard thing for me, but pushing to eat right, to meal prep, like that was what was key for me as well. So yeah, my family, we had no concept of what health was. My grandmother raised up a bunch of cooks, and we enjoyed food. So that's probably been the hardest part.
You can still enjoy it.
Yeah.
You can still enjoy it.
Just what you cook it with.
That whole, like you said, that not deprivation, but just, right. And all things in moderation. I'm a big proponent of that. Give yourself grace, you know, like, If I want chocolate, like I'm a sweet tooth girl, and so I'm going to crave sweet. It's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I will choose a piece of dark chocolate over a piece of chocolate cake. You know, like, so it's those little choices and giving yourself the grace to, you know, just
enjoy.
Moderate.
Yeah.
And, right.
It doesn't. Yeah, I think, you know, people, even with work, we become a slave to it, you know, as opposed to controlling what we're doing and enjoying what we're doing. We become, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that. It's like, no, you could, that can hold off until tomorrow. Really being mindful of that. Here is the guys from Portland, Beautiful Eulogy with Covet.
Why not? often shed my tears. Deep down I long for a place to belong, safe and calm. It seems I always went the wrong way, now all my dreams are gone. No destination left for me, no destiny to manifest. Trying to catch butterflies, but I got a hole in my net. I want to escape and run away, cause every day I'm forced to fake it. If the opportunity showed its ugly face, then I would take it. And no one would expect it, guess I never had a heart to tell them I wanted a fresh start. Cause I've been barely getting by for a long time. It's easier to leave and never have to see them bleed. I might sound like a coward, but inside I feel powerless. They say the eyes are the windows of your soul is sold. And my windows are broken glass to the pieces. That's why I hide and keep my secrets at.
So what's your setup like? What do you use? I was just on, you know, trolling your Instagram and I saw you have a setup similar to mine as far as like your iPad mini and a keyboard when you travel. So what does No More Dirty Work use to keep everything in alignment? You know, are you using any particular apps in order to handle all of those emails? Or are you just a traditional girl where you just go head forward?
Yeah, I do have a couple of favorite things for sure. I'm a Mac girl, one through and through. So my MacBook Pro, my phone, my iPad, I can work from anywhere. Especially with, you know, the not being able to just connect your computer, to your phone's internet signal, it's brilliant. You can literally work anywhere, anytime. A few weeks ago, I was doing an event in Florida and I sat on the beach and did a conference call and did some emails and it was great. Those are like, hard tools, definitely, my laptop, my iPad, my phone, are great. Some of my favorite apps, I love the whole Google suite. So when I can, I will use, Google Apps email. I use Google Calendar with a lot of clients, to share calendars and that sort of thing. Use iCloud calendars with a lot of clients as well. Evernote is great for storing kind of client information because I can access it from anywhere. And so I use that for a lot of client information. I have a notebook for each of my clients in there. I used to use Dropbox for a lot of document storage with clients. I try to store a lot of documents, especially the important stuff there, so that, if something were to happen to me, someone else has access to it, so that everything I've created for them is not limited to my computer. Google Drive is also just kind of brilliant for document collaboration, versus Dropbox. When it's a document that you can need to update often. I love spreadsheets. And so I do a lot of those on Google Drive, where we can collaborate on them and update them on a continual basis. I just switched to a new to-do list system a few weeks ago and I am in love with it. And it is called Todoist. So to do and then ist without the L. And it's beautiful and it's simple and it's straightforward. It's the most affordable to-do list system I've found. And it's super, it is robust enough yet simple enough. So I use it, with my team, as well as with clients, onboarding them onto that. And it's great for, managing our projects and things there. They have, it's iPhone friendly, it's Android friendly, it's PC friendly, it's Mac friendly, it's web friendly. So it's beautiful because you can access it anywhere, anytime. And it integrates with If This Then That, which is a brilliant website. So I have all sorts of fun little recipes set up where I can call a number and I can create a task from a phone call. I can text a number and create a task. So it's literally my new favorite thing that I'm like geeking out over because I love those kind of like nerdy things. Those are my top favorite tools for sure.
So were you using a different to-do list beforehand? Like I've used Clear Things like before you were using Todoist.
Yep, I was using Flow before I started using Todoist. And I really, really loved Flow. I used them for a few years. And before that I was using Things, but that was back in the day when Things did not sync over the air. And it also did not offer any collaboration. And I got to the point where I needed that. So I switched to Flow And it was getflow.com. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And it's, you know, its capabilities, but their pricing just and integration with onboarding, kind of onboarding clients into that was just not as easy or friendly. So Todoist is just a little bit more straightforward, and it's better for integrating integrating clients and as well as my team, kind of on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you've given people something nice to look into and see what works for them. I'm always interested to see what everybody uses. Almost everybody that I've interviewed uses Evernote. I'm a huge proponent of Evernote. If they decided to switch the free service, I would definitely give them my money. So, well, yes. Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you guys really enjoy Katie. I have enjoyed her. Her website is nomoredirtywork.com, and she's available on Twitter, on Instagram, and she is also available for hire, guys. So if you have any events or you need a personal assistant or you just need someone to bounce some ideas off of to figure out what you're doing with your event, she is available for you. So thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much, Christina. I appreciate it.
I really enjoy hanging out with Katie today. She is just a pure joy to hang around. She is good at what she does. Check out her website, nomoredirtywork.com. She's just a beacon of light of what is possible when you inspire to do what someone else has seen in you. Sometimes we're in these fields and we don't really know what we're called to, and then people point it out. But she was one that allowed someone to point it out, and then she was one who executed it, whether she knew what she was doing or not. But she knew that, hey, let me try this thing. And No More Dirty Work was birthed. Her last song today is Carrie Job, Here. And, you know, it's Carrie. We love her. All right. Thank you for joining me today on From Start to Finish. I look forward to hearing from you guys. Don't forget, retweet it, Winnipeg Azevia. You